What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. In fact, he's on location in Southern California doing so as we speak. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. I'm moderately confident that Drance is connected and ready to go. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, not much. I do have a knock on my hotel room door, though, so I'm pretty confident this will be interrupted at some point. I just checked in. They're like going to evict me immediately. One of those trips for me, you know?
All right. Well, as you try to fend off hotel security, we'll get into the show here because we got a lot going on. Mixing up our schedule a little bit. Drance is not going to be on the show tomorrow because of travel. So Dimitri is going to join us at 12:30 today, of course, from the Hockey PDO cast. So we'll do our regular Friday Hit with Dimitri today at 12:30. Look ahead to the upcoming schedule for the Canucks, including them playing the Anaheim Ducks tonight. And we'll talk with John Mattis from The Score at 1, get his thoughts on the Canucks and some of the other major storylines around the NHL right now. And of course, you can always text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. But the Canucks played last night. They play tonight as well, so we got a lot to get into. Let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 27th. And the headline is the Canucks, much like Snake Plissken, they escaped from L.A. with 2 points against the L.A. Kings after blowing a 2-0 third period lead in that game. They survive a couple of late power plays, another power play, a 4-on-3, 2-minute 4-on-3 power play in overtime, and eventually Connor Garland gets his second goal of the night to win it for the Canucks in overtime. And I think big picture, pretty easy one to caption in a lot of ways where, man, it didn't look pretty, and there's a lot you'd like to change. But they also desperately needed 2 points from that game last night.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the lines that Tocchet devised worked. And I think they worked so well that it didn't matter that the club got poor performances from Elias Pettersson, again.
Mm-hmm.
And, frankly, from Brock Besser. And yet, you know, I think O'Connor had a really strong game, and that line, especially in the first two periods, was able to win their matchups and played a lot against Kopitar and company and came out ahead. That was huge for the Canucks, without question. I thought, obviously, the Hedl line was Vancouver's best throughout the evening. And then, look, Hoglander brought a good dimension to that Pettersson line. They need, I think, some extra push, especially because Pettersson's not really driving for that line at the moment. So, you know, Hoglander gets the big goal, the big celly. I love that. And then they were able to score a power play goal and give themselves the insurance they needed until the Kings stopped shooting themselves in the foot. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I was like, I'm actually a little nervous about this Kings matchup because of what they showed against Vegas with that Byfield, Kempe, Fiala line. And then the Kings went away from it.
Yep.
As you noted, they would. Didn't generate a lick for 40 minutes. Like, couldn't get inside, couldn't get going off the rush, had nothing offensively. And then the moment they did what was bleedingly, blindingly obvious, they started throwing at a speed that the Canucks had no chance of catching up to. You know, like, you think about why that game turned and people will say the Canucks sat back. No, they couldn't handle LA's speed off the rush at all. At all. The moment that LA started playing an optimized lineup, the Canucks were dead in the water. And if the Kings had come out like that at the start of the game, if their head coach had been as prepared and had as much foresight as Vancouver's, the Canucks do not get 2 points out of last night. Like, flat out, obviously Quinn Hughes coming back was huge. Garland was immense. The Hedl played well. The penalty kill was exceptional. I thought Marcus Pettersson had a beast game on the back end. Tyler Myers put his neck on the line. Lankinen was really good. I mean, so I'm not taking credit away from Vancouver, but if you want to understand that game, I think it's really important to understand that deployment distinction. Like, the Canucks got 2 points out of the fact that their head coach had a better plan and outthought his opponent. And more importantly, you know, the old Sun Tzu thing, right? Don't interrupt an opponent when they're making a mistake.
Yes. Yep.
I don't know that the Canucks had even had an opportunity to interrupt their opponent. Their opponent was so intent on making a mistake. And I mean, I don't know that you'll see a more obvious one all season from an NHL team. Like, you know, if you watch their previous game, all you had to do was watch their previous game and know that they might have stumbled into something that permanently raises their ceiling as an attacking team. And then they immediately did not take that obvious lesson until it was almost too late. And the moment they did, they took over the game. I mean, honestly, Jamie, that's like tough. Like, I don't even know what to say about it. I very rarely am sitting at a game and thinking words like, this is malpractice. But I was. And I think Hiller's done a good job. I don't mean to like be overly critical. At least this didn't happen in like game six of a, you know, a 3-2 playoff series, or game five of a 2-2 playoff series, right? But you hope they take that lesson, because that was just about the poorest execution of a game plan you'll see all season from an NHL team. And the Canucks needed it desperately. They needed those 2 points desperately. And they should, honestly, they should send Hiller and his staff a gift basket, because they did them a mitzvah.
And from the Canucks' perspective, as you said, you know, coaching a big difference in that game, because the line tweaks and the line combinations did pay dividends. Although I want to be measured about this too, right? Because it's not like all of a sudden they were this dynamo offensive attack, right? And they still finished with what, 17 shots on goal. And obviously we saw what happened in the third period when they're leading by 2 goals, and then the Kings make their lineup tweaks, and then the Canucks are really, really back on their heels. So it's like a qualified success. But as we talked about on the show yesterday, there was no silver bullet that was going to completely remake what this team looks like offensively by juggling the lines. That was never going to happen. So it's a qualified success, but that might also be the most success they could have hoped for by shifting things, right? Like, you were never all of a sudden going to become an elite attacking team. You'd still like them to grow from 17 shots on goal, including overtime last night. But the options are just so limited. What specifically did you like about the new look lines and how they played last night?
So one thing I really liked was, you know, I was curious to see how it would look with the Garland-Joshua duo flanking a player like Hedl, who has more speed than most of the options we saw them play last year. And I thought that one thing that stood out to me right away, and actually I think there were more like chances generated than real actual scoring chances, but I still think it's an enormously good sign given what this team has looked like, how toothless they've been offensively. But I thought the space that Hedl was able to create, both with his speed and with the threat of his speed, opened up a ton of lanes for Garland, a ton of space for Garland, and he knew exactly how to use it. Like, think about that game. Think about how many times Garland would either get a pass just immediately after crossing the offensive blue or right before, and then attack wide. And he had reams of space and seams, right? There were, how many times did you see Garland beat and find space wide around a Kings defender and then send a pass into the slot that like just didn't connect or just got broken up, or the Canucks forward just, or defender just couldn't catch up to it? Like 3 or 4 times. Well, damn, I'll take that. I mean, if they keep that up, and they're going to have an easier time with it against most defensive groups as opposed to LA, given the speed of that blue line group collectively, even without Doughty last night. I mean, that's going to work. Like, that's going to work. If you're finding that much space against an elite defensive team, you're definitely going to be finding it against Anaheim tonight. And so I thought that was one thing that stood out to me immediately. Hedl opening up space and Garland knowing exactly how to utilize it. I thought that was a huge factor. I thought sicking Suter and O'Connor against in Tufts worked. And the fact that it worked despite what I thought was a pretty mid performance from Brock Besser. You know, like if Besser can play better, I really like the calibration of that line. I thought that was Drew O'Connor's best game as a Canuck. I know he's had bigger moments, yes, like the penalty shot game winner or what have you. But I thought that was his best game as a Canuck. He actually looked like he drove a bottom six line for me. And given that he was playing with Suter and Besser, I wouldn't usually come to that conclusion. But his work through the neutral zone, his work on the back check, I thought he was disruptive. I thought he was physical. Mm-hmm. And I thought he made that line work. You know, again, despite what I thought was a real off night from Besser. And then, you know, I thought Hoglander at least brought some chaos to that Pettersson line. And I think they need that. You know, we know what DeBrusk is, and he's been a pretty reliable north-south attacker for this team. But we also know what Pettersson is. And right now it's like, you know, the sort of thing that you can enter a Tesseract through in the movie Interstellar. You know, a bit of a black hole.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, spell that one out. Yeah, it's
was that too high concept?
No, there's not a lot there. I mean, in Pettersson's game, not in your analogy, although maybe in your analogy as well. And I do think it's a good caveat about the Kings' defensive strength, right? Because I'm saying, like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. I'm like, wow, these new line combinations really worked. They still only had 17 shots. I think that's true, but I also think it's a fair then, you know, counter to my counter to be like, yeah, against the best defensive team pretty much in the NHL. So we'll see how it ends up looking tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. You would imagine just rolling out with the same combinations, the same forward group after picking up the win. And after, as you said, you know, the first three units all have, or the first three lines all having something positive going for them last night against the LA Kings. Other big story from that game, of course, Quinn Hughes, the very, very late game time decision. I know you did a good job getting kind of the full story and the full rundown out of Tocchet after the game on exactly how that came to be. Goes out there for warm-up, not taking part in line rushes, looks like he's going to be a healthy scratch, and then about as late as you can be, right before the game, as Tocchet said, ends up being in the lineup and played really well. Definitely was not the level we're used to seeing from Quinn Hughes, which I think is understandable considering how much time he's missed and yeah, he was still good, but he wasn't like, it, you know, if you're making a list of like the top 30 Quinn Hughes games this year, that's not on it.
Sure. But that's what I mean. The best player on the ice.
Sure. Yeah, he was really good.
For either team.
It kind of reminded me of like Quinn Hughes from 2 years ago, but not from the last 2 years. You know what I mean? Where it's like that previous level he was at, which was still really, really good before he made the jump to Norris and like potential Hart Trophy candidate.
No, I think it was next level Quinn Hughes. I think it was next level Quinn Hughes finding his legs a bit. But I thought some of the ways that he walked the blue line, the overall control he exerted on the game, especially relative to the fact that the Kings have just a higher gear than the Canucks do at the moment. I don't think they win that game without him. I don't think they come close without him. And yeah, I mean, I thought he was marvelous. Like truly, I thought he was exceptional. Looked like the sort of player that actually can carry this team to a playoff spot, and they need that. I don't see half for this team without Quinn Hughes being at least at that level, and the fact that he was at that level right off the hop is fascinating. Talk to him post-game a little bit. Well, because I was late for his scrum, so I only wanted to ask him a couple. I didn't want to overtax him. But I did sort of ask him just about the challenge of being out for a month. Because that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about a guy who got back 2 days before missing 4 weeks of hockey, right? Closer to 4 weeks than three. And a couple things that he explained without getting too deep into it. But I do think the reason for the, you know, relative optimism when he first left that Dallas game and then the extended absence causing him to miss the Four Nations, I think in sort of trying to rehab, there was a compensation injury or a second thing that got dinged up as a result of, you know, just getting weak. That's what happens, right? You have a tear or an injury like an oblique reportedly, and muscles around that area tend to overexert themselves to try and compensate. And that's why oblique injuries are, assuming that is what it is. I mean, I'd never ask a guy directly to confirm that, but you know, they volunteer it or they don't.
Yeah.
But the, you know, if it is that, like, they have a really high re-injury risk. They come with a really high re-injury risk in addition to the sort of pain management, especially for players that lean on lateral burst. But, yeah, I mean, so I think that's what happened here, and that's sort of why he missed as much time as he did. Talked at length, too, about the mental challenge, right, being almost greater than the physical one for him. And, you know, given the context of the Four Nations face-off, you can totally understand that. So, yeah, I mean, look – Hughes is back. Happened by the skin of it, of the Canucks' teeth yesterday, right? The idea that, you know, there was the latest lineup card that Tocchet has submitted.
Yep.
Pretty fascinating and pretty shocking in real time, right? Once a guy doesn't take line rushes, like I'm used to seeing a guy who's a game time decision take line rushes and not be in.
Right.
That happens a couple times a year. I think this is the first time in 5 years that I can think of that a player didn't participate in rushes but still played. Like, that is a very rare occurrence. And so for Hughes to, you know, have been that much on the line, right, to have wanted to come back enough that he, like, put the medical staff in touch with the coaching staff at the very last minute and was like, hey, guys, I'm talking you into it. Let's go. I need to be in. And then to play 21 and a half minutes and have two assists in a win that the Canucks, like, needed, absolutely needed. I mean, now what do you say about that? Like, yeah. What? I mean, there's no superlatives you can throw on that to justify the, you know, the performance that we saw, frankly. Like, that's hockey toughness at its purest form.
Well, and I think the story of him calling Tocchet into the medical room and, you know, making his case, convincing him to play right under the deadline, or convincing him to let him play right under the deadline, like, just throw it into the growing legend of Quinn Hughes as a Canuck and as the Canucks captain as well. And he knows how important he is to the team. He knows how desperately they needed those 2 points. And that's why he wanted to be in the lineup. And he comes out and he helps them pick up those 2 points in a win. Lots of more we can get into from the game last night and looking ahead to the Ducks tonight as well, but we'll move on to the broadsheet quickly here. Not a lot new. I know Pierre LeBrun, just with a little bit of reporting on Brock Besser, saying there is still dialogue happening between the two sides, between Besser and the Canucks, but LeBrun also saying, quote, I don't know if this one gets done, which kind of continues to match a lot of what we've heard locally and nationally. And I know Elliot Friedman on the Fan Hockey Show also noting that he thinks Besser is a term issue, which again matches what we're hearing. And kind of the in that holding pattern with a week plus 1 day to go until the NHL trade deadline on Brock Besser. Not a lot new on that front. To the lineup note, so they do play the Ducks tonight. Now, no morning skate. Won't hear from Tocchet until around 4:30. Of course, because Hughes was a late inclusion in that game, they end up going with 11 forwards, 7 defensemen. Archdeep Baines is the healthy scratch. So Carson Soucy got back in, but I guess on the back-to-back, right, they wanted to manage Hughes' minutes, keep it maybe around the 16-minute mark. He ends up getting up over 21, which, of course, there's overtime, but it's also like, yeah, it's Quinn Hughes. You're not going to not play him once he's in the lineup. You're going to use him. I am curious to see, do they go 11-7 again, or are they comfortable now saying, okay, Hughes, you're back. You're not a game-time decision anymore. You're playing. We're just going to roll out there with 6 defensemen. Part of that as well is Tyler Myers' status. And, man, he takes that puck off the neck and scary situation. I just can't get over like how incredibly tough and durable Tyler Myers is. This is like a regular occurrence for him. Remember early in the year we went in awkwardly to the boards, I think, and it was like right before his 1,000th game, and we were all like, oh no, is this gonna like delay his 1,000th game? Does it put it in jeopardy this year? Like, what's going on? And it's like, no, I'm fine. He played the next game, and now we're in a situation here. We'll see if he gets in, but as you said, he might even be an option for tonight. Like, it's a regular occurrence where he has these really scary, dangerous looking injuries, and then he's in the lineup like the next game or the game after because he's just that tough.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was the one in October. I legitimately was like, that looks like a high ankle sprain to me.
Yeah,
right. Like, you know, that looks like a 2 to 6 week injury with performance impacts lasting much of the season. Nope, he's right back in, and there's been no impacts. And look, I mean, blocking a shot with your neck, and then the reaction was, you know, what scares you in the press box watching it, just because, you know, Myers is such a tough player.
Yeah.
Right. So if he's reacting like that, you're like, oh man, this might be actually bad. Seemed like it pinched a nerve, had a little bit of dizziness. Obviously was able to sort of shake it off. I actually had a chat with him post game. So he was in the locker room, just like on his phone, I'm sure handling concerned texts from families and representatives and stuff, right? That's tends to be how it worked, but seemed fine. And then, of course, Tocchet confirmed basically the same line that Myers had told us in the locker room. So good to see. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I think his status will probably shape the 11-7 thing more than anything else. But I mean, I'd be, I don't, I look, I don't know either way, right? Those sorts of injuries too, you don't know how they react overnight.
Right.
Right. So we'll see. But yeah, it won't be a surprise if he's in by any means.
No, not at all. Do you have a gut feeling on the 11-7, or is it really just down to kind of Myers and his status and his availability?
I don't think Tockett likes going 11-7.
No.
And if you're going to go 11-7 and then play Hughes 21 and a half minutes anyway, you know what? What's the point?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going 11-7, it's to use Hughes in a specialist role. If you're not going to be able to do that anyway, right? Like, if the best laid plans are going to conflict with game state and game script and what you actually need to win, then just roll with 6-12. Roll with the lineup you're most comfortable with, because you're not going to, you know, you're not going to limit his role anyway.
Other lineup note and injury note in this case, Rick Dhaliwal reporting that Noah Juulsen's season is over, had surgery apparently for a hernia. So that will end Noah Juulsen's season, and just tough break for Noah Juulsen. I know it's been a much tougher go for him this year in the lineup with the Canucks, but he was a huge part of their team, certainly last season. And the toughness he brought, the penalty killing ability was really, really valuable for this team. Also a pending unrestricted free agent. So that obviously impacts what the Canucks were able to do at the trade deadline. But tough break for Noah Juulsen. Rick Dhaliwal reporting that his season is over after having surgery for a hernia. That's the update on Noah Juulsen. Also just want to mention Lucas Dostal will start in net for the Ducks tonight. And certainly you would expect Archer Shelov's in net for the Canucks. All right, playoff standings update. The Canucks playoff odds tick back up to 78% per Dom's model with the win. And really they're back to that dead heat status with the Calgary Flames. Canucks 560 points percentage. Calgary Flames 561, so 0.001 difference in the points percentage. Canucks with 65 points in 58 games, Flames with 64 in 57. Locked in a dogfight for that final wildcard spot. Do you have a betting gambling update for us tonight, Drancer?
Yes, I will in a second.
All right.
Thing that's interesting really quickly about the dead heat,
yeah,
is that the Calgary Flames hold the regulation wins hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So while it seems like, you know what I mean, like it's a dead heat in some ways, provided that the Flames get 1 point tonight against Tampa Bay, which, you know, tall order, don't get me wrong, I'm not minimizing that by any means, but they would be
back in a playoff spot. In the NHL standings page, they would even leap over. Yeah. Because they have one,
that's what I'm saying.
They have like one additional regulation win.
Right. So it's just funny that like 1 point, you know, seems like a big missed opportunity for them. And it would be, especially because the Canucks are, well, the Canucks have Quinn Hughes and they don't. So good luck to you. But the fact remains that, it's just like a funny little wrinkle to this. The Canucks are favorites on the road on the second leg of a back-to-back. The line opened at -175, but the Canucks have been, but the Ducks have been steamed to +110.
Yeah.
So pretty close to a pick 'em.
I saw it at Canucks -130, but -175 seems crazy, frankly. Well,
that was open.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is that the Ducks have a better record than the Canucks across, you know,
yep,
the last 25 games that both teams have played. So fairly interesting. And then I nailed the over under last show, eh?
Yeah.
The 5.5, that was just that was a free square, free money. 5.5 tonight. I still like the under, man. I don't know why the Canucks are still getting 5.5. Like, they're both good defensively and can't score. Like, what are we talking about? This is, we should be riding. I think if you're a hockey gambler, you should be riding Canucks unders, you know, hard. And especially because everywhere else, it's October hockey in the wake of the Four Nations break. Like, everywhere else, you're seeing these 6-5 games,
yep,
and 5-4 games. And that's just not the case in Canucks games. There's no helium in these games. No offense is rising. So ride the wave. Enjoy it.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. And again, Dmitry Filipovich joins us here on a Thursday next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
And not much.
All right.
I do have a knock on my hotel room door, though, so.
Mr. McAllister's room service bill, sir.
Kevin, you spent $967 on room service!